have that good stretch of good weather and all that stuff. It gets mopped up pretty fast.
Okay, folks.
Yes, it does.
I think we'll go ahead and get started. No agenda tonight. I didn't make an agenda because I just got a couple of things to talk about, and I thought we'd fill the rest of our time with just some kind of general discussion about 2018, and that'll become kind of more clear as I walk through some of what we want to cover tonight. Couple pieces of housekeeping first. For the advisors, we've got no books. Who didn't get one as we came in?
Oh, I didn't get one.
So now we've got, these are bigger to encompass what you're likely to get here as we continue moving through this process. You're already taken care of. Norm, you got one, right? And Ross, I handed one to you, and I think I handed one to Marlisa as she came through the door as well. Okay. So first, another little bit of housekeeping that I want to get to is introduce you all to Damon Peterson. So Damon Peterson is our new Bio4. He's my replacement for my old position, not my new one. Don't get your hopes up. Damon comes to us from University of New Mexico, where he's a PhD candidate, just getting ready to wrap up. I think you're still working on your dissertation, right? On some white puff type fish that happens down somewhere. Just here he is, just kind of getting his beak wet here, and this will be his first meeting, so take it easy on him.
Yeah, I've been here for 5 days.
Five days?
Actually, 4.7.
He started on Wednesday.
Your fair game.
Started a day and a half ago, right?
So if we don't mind really quick, for at least for the people who are here, could we just kind of go through and do a little introduction? I know it'll be redundant. We've done this 1,000 times. But just for Damon's benefit, kind of just your name, interest, why you're here, real quick. And we don't have to worry about staff this time because he already knows us. So.
Greg McMillan, commercial fisherman, Gilner.
Tim?
No, I'm sorry. Tim Hamilton. I live up in McClary, this end of the county. Been involved in fisheries enhancement volunteer groups for a zillion years. Spent most of my life as a government affairs advocate in the legislature and so on. And I feel like I should disclose to you, because I don't think they did, that advisory work is a contact sport in this state. Mm-hmm. So wear a helmet. Good to see you.
Damon or Damien?
Damon.
Mm-hmm. Damon, my name is Marlisa Dugan. I am a freshwater recreational fishing advocate involved with the Willapa. I have a long history in the area and have been involved with the Fish and Wildlife Department for about 6 years now.
I'm Norm Reinhardt. I'm out of Kitsap County, and occasionally I fish up there.
I'm Ross Barkhurst in South Bend. I live on Willapa Bay, conservation and recreational fishing advocate.
Lance Gray, commercial fisherman.
Go ahead. Why don't you gentlemen in the back, since he's going to see your faces a lot as well.
Ron Weiser.
Art Holman Sports. Pure Leroy Weiser, ex-advisor.
Paul Whaley. I sports fish down the bay.
All right. Thank you all for that. So let's get to the reason why we're here tonight. Some of you attended the Fish Committee meeting. Seems like a lifetime ago. I believe I want to say the 9th or the 10th of January, where we did present the materials that was presented to you folks at the last commission meeting, or the last advisory group meeting. Did make a few small changes to some of the implementation stoplight chart based on the input that we received at that last advisory group meeting. So where we are at, the department will not have the comprehensive review done by February. We will not be done. We've still got, as we've gone through kind of detailed discussions starting with our Saturday workshop about what we've implemented and the new sources of data and all that stuff. We're still working through trying to get all that information into our run reconstructions, planning models, and all that stuff. So we've got a considerable amount of work left to do. Plus, we're struggling with some of the analyses given the relative short history of mass marking, i.e. complete brood years, returns, under fish that we can actually tell the difference between hatchery and wild. So that's presenting us some issues as well. Just trying to figure out how we incorporate all these new sources of data into everything and make it seamless and make Barb's life as easy as possible while she inputs and seeds those models. That's what we're working on. Plus, we are rapidly coming up on North of Falcon. We have a deadline of somewhere in the middle of the month for getting our forecast done, and we cannot do both at the same point in time. Keep in mind, Columbia River has been going through a comprehensive review for over a year now, and that has, Columbia River has the benefit of both federal entities working on that, as well as both states, Washington and Oregon. So they have a much bigger, I will say, funding and staff to handle a task like this. We want to make sure that what we do is comprehensive and is accurate and precise as we can possibly do, and make sure that we've got a real thorough analysis of what's being done. Some of the data that we collected this year in 2018, for instance, genetics information, we won't even get that back for another month or so. So in order to make sure that we have a thorough understanding of everything and have everything back and ready to go, this process is going to go on hiatus for a couple of months so we can get North of Falcon done and get our preseason planning and get ready for 2019 fisheries. And then we will go back to the commission sometime in the summer. Right now, my options are June and August. There is no July commission meeting. There is only a conference call, and I definitely don't want to do a presentation or something of this magnitude on a conference call. That wouldn't be fair to anyone. The June meeting is in Port Angeles. I believe August is in Olympia, so that may be the one we go to. I'm not quite sure yet. So there'll be more on that to come as we kind of move through North of Falcon and whatnot. So
what is a comprehensive review? Is that this for 2017?
There's going to be a lot more. That was just the basis of what we could kind of get together in the amount of time we had. Plus, we want to make sure, right? I mean, some of the 2018 information we're not even going to have until August of next year. We won't know freshwater catches until we get CRC, 6 or 7, 8 months ago. So we want to make sure that we have all the sources of information kind of compiled, a whole look at phase one, right, across all years. So
the comprehensive review really is, though, in your case here, is for phase one of our policy?
I mean, that's the data that we have looking forward. Yeah. And that's the direction that we were given in the policy document, was to do that comprehensive review at the end of phase one. So we want to make sure that that's inclusive of everything that we can possibly get. What we will do with the commission in February, there will be a decision made, but the department will be seeking some interim guidance based on what we've provided so far for fisheries planning for 2019. So that's what we'll be doing. Norm, I see you. Go ahead.
No, I'm just waiting for you.
No, that's...
I'm going to translate that so my mind can comprehend it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the comprehensive review will not be completed by February, at the February Commission meeting, Region 6 is going to ask the Commission for guidance in implementing the policy based on
December and January.
In January.
Yeah. Yeah. We gave them basically, and we walked through this advisory group in January, kind of where we were, what we've been able to put together so far, what the challenges are, and we'll utilize some of that information. And the commission will utilize some of that information in order to give us interim guidance for 2019.
So they may provide guidance on any and all aspects.
Any and all aspects. It's their policy.
It's their policy.
Yeah.
So if I have a concern about anything they may be considering in implementing or changing for this coming season, I may want to be present at the February commission meeting to provide public input.
Absolutely.
Will there be public input for that briefing?
Yes. So right now, and I've seen a tentative schedule. I believe we are on Willapa Bay. We'll be on at 10 o'clock on Saturday, February 9th. I believe that's the right date. Grace Harbor, just in case you're wondering, is tentatively scheduled right now for 9. So we will do that Grace Harbor annual review at 9 o'clock, and then we will jump into this one at 10. And right now it is scheduled for an hour-long agenda item with 30 minutes of public comment is what it's scheduled for. So there will be ample opportunity for folks to weigh in. Go ahead, Tim.
So the way I understand it, we have a policy that's in effect right now.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so you're talking about going in February to get some kind of a guidance from the commission?
Yeah, based on the information we have provided, do they want to continue on? Do they want to do something different?
Okay. You can't do North of Falcon without...
We can't do North of Falcon without the guidance. Absolutely, and so that's why we're seeking that.
That's my problem. I don't agree that you can't do North of Falcon because you got a non-binding policy in the first place. It's already written. It's already there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go into North of Falcon. You don't want it. So the department wants to go in and get something out of this commission.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's going to come into the commission meeting as a proponent of something. Will you share what it is that the department is proponing, acting as a proponent for?
We're not being a proponent of anything.
So there's no conversations with this commission that's going to go on Thursday night, the night before, with the commission, fish committee, or anything like that. This department's going to go in and present some data and stand down and say, tell me what you want me to do.
Yeah. What we've been, so a little bit more information on that. Willapa came up at the last commission meeting on the 11th and 12th of January. I believe those are the right dates. During future meeting planning discussion, they talked about Willapa, kind of furthered the conversation from Fish Committee about not having a finalized product done. And what we may do moving forward, Commissioner McIsaac, I believe, asked for a couple of topics to focus on for the February 9th commission meeting. One of those is describe fully where we are. So they want a full understanding of what's been done and where we're at this point in time. He also asked for some better background or analysis, understanding of the 14%, 14 and 20%. So we're all intimately familiar with that, right? It came from all. So we'll talk about that a little bit and the assumptions that went in to the AHA model and what came out of it, as well as talking about the rebuilding plan, the 16 to 21 years. Yeah, so my notes here are from that discussion, and it's available online for any of you who want to listen. It's under the, I don't want to say the item number because I may be wrong. I've got a number in my head, but it was during the future meeting planning discussion. It's a 21-minute audio on the commission website
on that Saturday. So
right.
Feel Saturday. Free to listen to it. Yeah.
On Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is on the commission website. So his Commissioner McIsaac asked for a full analysis of 14%, where that came from, what the basis of it was, and then also would like to have us put together an expected schedule and progress of comprehensive review. So kind of describe fully where you are a little bit more, topics in that. So
okay.
Right now, and I see you, Tim, I'll get right back to you. We've provided the information that we have right at this point in time. We've still got a lot of more work to do. That's not it. There's going to be much more. We've got coded wire tag data from 2018 that needs to be analyzed, pulled out of RMIS and looked at, the genetics data included. We need to finalize as much as we can in a preliminary fashion, 2018 run reconstructions. We'll, for some of the recreational harvest information, we will have to use recent year averages until we get CRC. That's all we have until we get those actual numbers. Kind of as we're, what we're doing right now, right? Barb is seeding the forecast model, and at this time of the year, we will go through and finalize 2017 numbers. So we wait a little while, put that stuff away, come back to it during this time frame, go back through and take that final look at 2017 QA QC. So you may see some numbers that are a little bit different than what we've provided. They haven't shifted around too much. I think the last time I showed you guys it, or in that presentation you have right there, for instance, nacelle impact rate for wild Chinook was 10.5. In that presentation, I believe it's at 11 now. So those numbers shift around a little bit just as we go through all the error checking and QA QC. And then she will, once 2017 is finalized and we're good there, then she moves on to 2018 and we start reconstructing that run based on the data we have, knowing that some of the rec information where we don't have active monitoring will be recent year averages as a placeholder until we get that. So that's kind of why some of that stuff hangs out a little bit because of the lag in CRC. So we need to just go through and do our due diligence there. And you know, quite frankly, we've added a lot of sources of data. We've increased what we're doing and are collecting a lot more pieces. And we need time to get it all in, make sure it's accurate, and air check it, and do some of those analyses. So that's what we've been asked to do for February 9th.
So
go ahead.
You're going to do this on February 9th. This is the last advisory meeting we're going to have till that date?
Yes.
Okay. So is it fair to say that you're not going to show us or engage us in any fashion with what you're going to present to that commission, or will we have to tell them that ourselves?
No, we will. Okay. We will. As soon as I'm in the process of building that presentation, my marching orders changed.
Right.
I already had a February 9th presentation ready to go. 16 slides, done, ready to go, sitting on my desk, ready for this meeting to take input on and ready to take to the commission. Friday, when everybody got back from PSC, is when I found out that things are different.
Yeah.
Friday afternoon.
Okay, so here's my concern. Is that you mentioned that there could be a different, you were going to explain where the 14 and the 20% came from.
Yeah, they want to look at some of the background and
what
and,
if you put out a position that I totally disagree with? Is that, so I'm not so when is
yeah.
this going you understand what I'm saying,
yeah.
Chad?
Yeah.
This
I get
department
exactly
has explained things that happened in the ad hoc process to develop this policy that is totally contrary to what I saw with my own eyes, heard with my own ears.
Okay.
So I have no faith, zero, that this department will present to that commission what the reason for 14 and 20 was.
Yep.
It may have been what they thought it was that they weren't telling us and decided they weren't going to share with us, but that doesn't mean it's what the public shared.
Okay.
So what I would you like you whoever told you Friday that it changed, I would hope that you would go back to them and tell them, We'd like to avoid a confrontation in February, but if we can't see what this department is going to pull with that commission, I guarantee you it's highly likely a confrontation will occur.
You have my personal guarantee, Tim, that you guys will be provided that presentation prior to the commission meeting as I have it finished. I have a deadline of next Wednesday, so I'm hopeful.
That's
I'm
great.
Hopeful it'll be. I'm well, hopeful
you,
I'll be able to get
you
it
know,
done.
You
by
know,
then.
You know what I'm trying to say.
I know exactly what you're trying to say, and it was never my intention to not provide that to you folks, as well as getting it out to the distribution list prior to the commission meeting.
I compliment you on that, and I remember one time I testified not too long ago. Is get Olympia off the man's air hose, okay? I have no faith that Olympia's got off your air hose. You just confirmed me that I got a fat foot on the air hose at Olympia.
Alisa?
Can you tell me why they wouldn't let you present what you have?
It wasn't anything like that. It was just based on the discussion during that future meetings planning, the commission asked for something different. So I just have to switch gears. What I was presenting was implementation and performance. I built on that. You guys kind of saw the basis of that at the meeting 2 weeks ago. And with what I presented to the FISH committee, all I was really doing was rounding that out. I mean, I already had the meat of a lot of it done for our first advisory group meeting, whenever that was in January. So it's basically... Mostly that, with a few changes. So, Ross?
It seems like, you know, I remember some of what went into the 14% and all that jazz back in the day.
Yeah.
But it seems like, what hopefully underlaid all that and underlaid any decisions about what to do with the 14% now was keeping a safety margin between us and ESA listing, a good safety margin. And so, rightly or wrongly, some of us, and I did, had confidence that the policy was set up to, if it was followed, the policy was set up to maintain a safety margin as best we knew what it should be. And, you know, we've over-harvested 3 of the 4 years on Chinook and some of these things. And so I assume we've eaten into that safety margin some. And I would hope, whether they ask for it or not, that you talk to them a little bit about how much more safety margin do you want to bite into. Because that's what it's all about. If we thought we could kill twice as many wild fish and we wouldn't get close to the ESA, why not? You know? But I never had that impression that we could do that. That's what I'm afraid of.
No, that's fair.
Then we'll all suffer.
Yeah.
Commercial and sports.
No, I mean, you folks were there, every one of you in this room, except for Purple. We're around at one of the policy developments, either as a member of the public sitting in the back or here at this table as an advisor. My talking points on the 14% are, the first thing we did was we did a workshop down in Raymond at the high school. We presented a whole lot of information and we put out a straw dog poll. And we asked the public what they would like to see in terms of a rebuilding time frame. And the majority of those responses said that they were willing to do that in an aggressive way and feel some pain in order to reach our conservation objectives in 16 to 21 years. So then I took those marching orders, just in terms of the rebuilding time frame, and started running the model. What would it take in terms of a harvest rate to reach that objective? And the number we came back with was 14%. That's what the model predicted. Keep in mind, it is just a model. All the sources of information that are necessary to run that model are not at our fingertips. Specifically, some of the weir efficiencies, some of the stray rates, given the lack of coated wire tags in some areas, specifically NEMA. Not having any idea of freshwater productivity, a lot of surrogates. I had to pull a lot of data from other places or further literature in order to make that model function. You know, similarly, we've talked about this before, the 4,353. It's the number. It's the number we have. It's the number we're managing to. But I don't think anybody in this room can say that's the absolute number that we that we necessarily need, myself included.
And what I remember is that, you know, the 20% wasn't going to bring us, wasn't going to be a recovery period.
Yeah.
The 20% was going, was a little too much, but we had a lot of hatchery fish to take care of.
Yeah.
We wanted to take care of them. Hopefully that would help PHAS and bring a few more fish home. But then when you got to 14%, now, you know, you hope for an upward trajectory during that 20% period, which
was selected
we didn't yet. And then when you went to 14%, okay, now you're closing the gap. And so, you know, it just makes some of us worried that, you know, we didn't have our upper trajectory. And the 20%, and we exceeded it maybe 3 or 4 years. And, oh, boy, you know, it just we worry. And that's all we know. We don't see here what you're working on.
So one more. There's a couple other little things here that, are at play when we're talking about Willapa Bay salmon management, upcoming items. I believe Tim has referenced this in other meetings before, and the Willapa Bay policy calls out hatchery reform, references the hatchery reform policy. We all know that hatchery reform is undergoing a review. It hasn't, in the years that it's been enacted, I won't necessarily say enacted in Willapa Bay, because we've been slow to do that. But in other areas, we have seen no return. We have seen continuing decline. So that policy is under review. My understanding of that right now is that presentation, there will be a hatchery reform presentation, a progress update in February. Oh, I believe that one's on Friday though. You'll have to check the agenda. I didn't specifically, you know, memorize that one. There'll be a progress update on that. I don't think there'll be a whole lot of meat in it, but I'm not sure. I haven't seen that presentation yet. But the final presentation is due to the commission in September, with them scheduled to take action. I believe in October. I'm not sure about that. It may be pushed till November. So. It'll be at least October or November before we know what the metrics we're shooting for in terms of hatchery reform are. Right now, we don't know. We're moving forward in Willapa with plans for 19 for it to be the same metrics as they have been. Yeah. We're shooting for 30% PHAS in Nacelle and Willapa, right? That's what we're shooting for, and, you know, right integration and some of those other things as well. But we won't know what those goalposts will be. And I think that's a necessary part of salmon management in Willapa Bay. We need to know what the final outcome and what the commission guidance is in terms of hatchery reform. Another part of that is this enhanced fisheries package that's moving through the legislature. The commission has asked the department to produce a lot more fish, 50 million Chinook statewide and 5 million coho or something like that.
For the benefit of everyone that may not understand what an enhanced fisheries project is, I believe that's connected to the southern resident killer whale.
So there's two. There's two. It is not actually. This is just enhanced fisheries package. To produce more fish statewide. And then also, as you pointed out, there's the southern resident killer whale conversation. We won't have a resolution on any of that stuff until we get our budget from the legislature. So we can say we want to do everything we want to do. As Tim has pointed out to us many times, those folks hold the purse strings. We can only do what they fund us to do. So, in terms of southern resident killer whales, Willapa has been identified as a place
as a place where we have some capacity to raise more fish for prey availability for those animals. You folks, advisors, and if you missed that meeting and didn't get the handout that I'm going to reference right now, make sure and shoot an email to Barb and she can get it to you if you'd like to look. We have the ranking document that I provided to you folks a few months ago that shows the coastal Chinook stocks score pretty highly on that prey availability piece for southern residents.
They put that out in Vancouver, I think. If I remember right, like there were 12 Chinook stocks and Willapa Bay was number 6 or something. You know, we were in the...
Yeah, there's in our books, there's a ranking table. There's a ranking table here. This was a collaborative project done by NOAA and the department. Yep, NOAA Fisheries. It's right here. It's under your 9/14/18 tab. Southern resident.
It was either Willapa or it was Coastal Falls.
Chinook stocks. Yeah, it's not. It doesn't. If I remember correctly, it calls out Walk Coast. Not necessarily Willapa specific.
Coastal Falls.
Yeah, Coastal Falls Chinook.
Right.
Obviously, for that pod that feeds off the mouth of the Columbia and off Grace Harbor and Willapa Bay, Spring Chinook in the Columbia, that's number one. Right. That's the big one. Then there's Coastal Spring Chinook as well, falls into that. So we don't have any of those. We're not worried about that.
I thought we were standing up a Spring Chinook program at Fort Creek.
Yeah. I was going to get to that in just a second. So then there's that as well. We probably need to have some discussion around Spring Chinook, and that needs to be something that we talk about in terms of the policy document. Right now, it's my understanding that it's about 700,000, a little short of 700,000. I think it's 670,000 eggs were transferred from Kalama to Forks Creek. They were pretty poor quality, folks. They were pretty poor quality, and not only has Kalama had issues with IF rates, mortality, we're seeing that as well. We're guesstimating we may end up somewhere a little north of a half a million when we get to release those. Which will be coming up here in May. We'll release those. Based on age composition, I expect most of those to come back as 4-year-olds. So we'll probably see those fish back in 2022.
Is that the only river we have in Washington we can get eggs from?
No. I don't... pardon me. I don't think it's the only, there were some disease issues and other things. I think Kalama is our preferred location, and we wouldn't be pulling those from anywhere else. Keep in mind.
What I understood about that was that NOAA's would only give us permission.
For Kalama.
All these new things that have been watched through NOAA, and NOAA would only give Forks Creek permission to use Kalama stock.
Kind of a shitty stock, so.
Yeah, but it is what it is. They weighed in.
Because of hatchery reform.
Yep, because of hatchery reform. It's my understanding. There were some disease issues and stuff like that, so they thought, you know.
It's coming back white, too. That's not a cool thing.
We'll see. Maybe they change color.
Maybe.
When they come out of
Willapa. They've been coming back there white.
So we probably need to have a discussion around Spring Chinook. And I'm guessing that we'll be similar to the policy we have now. That's one thing that we'll have to add is some species specific guidance on Spring Chinook and what we do there, and some weigh in from the commission on how we should allocate that for once whatever it is that we get back. We will not be harvesting broodstock in Willapa Bay. This is meant to be a put and take type deal. So we're putting out as many as we can to feed the orcas. Increase that prey availability, and we'll get some number of fish back. The SAR that I'm utilizing in my modeling for that is 0.33. So easy way to say that is if we release a million fish, we'd get about 3,300 adults back. Now that's a real swag guess, man.
We've never done it before.
We've never done it before. I
put some time and thought into it, did a little research and a little fact checking, and I think that's the best number I can come up with.
What's the run timing in the Kalama, April or?
I would assume that we're going to hit those in March, April, May. Yeah. I would assume that their run timing wouldn't be too much dissimilar from Chehalis Spring Chinook. So I'm sorry, I've been missing the list.
We got Norm times two and Marlisa.
Okay.
So in February, now, since the department's asking for the commissions some interim guidance on this policy, when I think through this policy, and you made that connection to North Valley.
Yeah.
Okay, we need this policy in order to walk forward with North of Falcon. So that guidance you need sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
And for me, the way I think of this policy, what are the things that pertain to North of Falcon that the department would need to proceed through the North of Falcon process? So let me finish. So that means that when I go to the, hopefully I'll be at the commission meeting, I may need to be prepared to, in 3 minutes, talk about 14 versus 20%, because that's going to be an impact on what we do at NLF. Recreational priority for Chinook within the WELPA system, because if we're asking for interim guidance, they could change that interim guidance for recreational priorities. At the same time, dates that fisheries start to harvest, and I'm talking about the commercial fleet, in areas where the commercial fleet can harvest, and the methods of harvest, such as tangle nets, okay, all of those are needed in order to walk through North of Falcon, so that at that February meeting, when I write my name down that I want to provide input, I have to be prepared to address any or all of those issues that I may want the commission to consider when they're crafting their guidance, because we all know that you will not get that guidance Saturday night. That what you're asking for will probably go to the Fish Committee, which will, I'm going to speculate, be 2 weeks later.
It's possible.
Possible. There may or may not be a teleconference or a face-to-face meeting. I don't know how they'll structure that. To talk about, to continue the discussion on anything in this policy that you need or the department needs to proceed with North of Falcon. And I base that on historically watching the process roll every year. So I'll be prepared to go there, and I'll be prepared to ask that if you're going to continue this discussion at the Fish Committee meetings, I would ask that you do what you have done in the past. At a minimum, allow the advisors to listen in. Or allow them to attend. As far as participation, I don't think they allow that in their subcommittees.
No, they do.
So actually, that's all been changed. Fish Committee meetings are open to the public. They, for the foreseeable future, starting with the one we just did, will be in room 175.
The process isn't going to be, it will start Saturday morning, February, whatever that date is. It will start that Saturday morning, but that's only the start of the process. When do you anticipate that they will be providing this department guidance for Wolpa Bay fisheries? Or on this policy, so they can be put...
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, Norm. I don't know how much conversation they've had with each other since we presented what we presented in January. Obviously, there's some feeling from some commissioners that they've got enough to go on, that they're going to weigh in on whether we're moving forward with the 14% or they want to do something different. I have no inkling of that right now.
Chad, my concern is they put the first three principles of after reform in advance. They haven't rescinded it.
Yeah.
They just put it in advance.
Yeah.
At the same time, Ron Warren had made comment that, and I'm going to roll over this to talking not just about Springers, but about these enhanced fisheries packages, specifically geared at southern killing resident whales, that the intent of those fish are to provide no benefit to either the commercial or the recreational fleet, that those fish are being raised for one reason only. They're targeted at feeding whales. And that the thought that they've been getting, some of the pressure they've been getting out of other areas of Washington State, I'm talking about the department, is the thought that, oh, we're going to raise a lot more fish, we're going to get a lot more opportunity to go fish for them, and we'll get a lot more fish in our fish boxes. That has been refuted by the department.
Yeah.
So as we talk about it here in this committee, or Grace Harbor, or Puget, or Columbia, I just want to make sure that I frame it correctly so that I'm understanding the intent of why we're raising more fish and what benefit may or may not trickle down to not just me.
But I think he's just like he said, you're talking about two different things. You're talking about the southern killer whale part of it, those fish, and
the enhanced
fish. He's talking about the southern killer whale part of it, not the enhanced.
Yeah.
Not the 50 million that they're going
to
raise,
which is meant to do just
for
to
us.
Enhance fisheries. So
that's,
Norm,
that's the difference in that.
Yeah.
The biggest part of it, the 50 million, is going to be for enhancing our fisheries.
Yeah,
that's if we get the money.
I'm trying to address
those Springers.
Yeah.
Because those Springers, even though you might, and that is a wag, 0.33 on Springers.
It is what it is.
And Walpa Bay, I wouldn't be, myself, I'm not looking forward to it, because that's a southern killer resident whale piece. It has nothing to do with that other part.
No, Norm, you're exactly correct, although we'd be naive to think that there won't be some ancillary benefits, right? Obviously,
exactly.
If we're going to release more hatchery fish, it changes the mark rates in each of those fisheries. You might see a small boost in harvest, but as you mentioned, that's what they're meant to do, feed the whales, and our management objectives, at least as far as we're concerned, there's some other places where there's actually hatchery management objectives, Southern Puget Sound. But for us, our management objectives are expressed in terms of wild impacts, and that won't change, right? So those limiters, those constraints on the fisheries planning process are still the constraints. All that does is maybe change the proportions of fish in the pool, right? Changes the mark ratio in those fisheries. But people who are seeing it as a windfall and all of a sudden all these areas are going to be open because we're producing more fish are not paying attention. That is not the case. So, and then to the second part, Fish Committee, all those meetings are now public. Public is encouraged to attend. In fact, another piece of information, I don't know if you know, Larry Carpenter is now chair of the Fish and Wildlife Commission. That just took place in January. And Commissioner Barbara Baker is vice chair now. So kind of have some new leadership on the commission, although long time, at least in Commissioner Carpenter's case, long time been there. He's also the chair of the Fish Committee. And when we met in January, the night after we all met here, some of the Willapa advisors attended and were allowed to speak. So I wouldn't envision that changing.
I almost guess or would envision the Fish Committee changing, and McIsaac is acting an awful lot like a member of the Fish Committee, and he's not. And so I'm wondering if maybe Carpenter's going to come off and maybe something's going to happen.
You're not going to catch me in that trap.
I'm just saying, I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea. That sort of stuff is outside of my
But it's not official anyway.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So what the commissioners decide to do and how they elect to tell about that stuff. So yeah, it is what it is.
Who's next?
One way or the other. Marlisa.
Marlisa.
Tim.
I have some questions about the increase in Chinook production and would like to see some information on what you suspect our stream and bay bearing capacity is in Ropa as we start to crank out more fish. This is something that, as a biologist, you certainly have information and data that you can probably do some surmising. You may not have exact science, but I think that this kind of information really needs to be talked about so that we don't find ourselves 4 years down the road in this increased Chinook production wagon and find out that we have less fish coming back before because we haven't gotten our habitat cleaned up in the bay and there's no place for these fish to rear out there. So I know that there are certain individuals who have been working on, you know, bay habitat issues with grass. Ross Barker's for one. I know he's a great soldier trying to work on those issues, and I think that the department has kind of let that slip. I think that if you're going to put more fish out there, we need to look at this bigger picture. It needs to be part of any presentation that you put together to the commission. I'm all for, you know, as many fish as we can support, but I think things have changed out there. You know, if we can't bring up the minimum natural origin spawner brood stock levels, everybody's percentage keeps going down. We have to turn this around, you know, so that there's more impacts to share amongst everyone, and we forget that. I don't see that in anybody's presentation as we're looking at doom and gloom. You know, oh my gosh, we didn't make it again. You know, our numbers are smaller, you know. We need to get that trajectory up, and we need to always keep focused on what those expected numbers for recovery are, not come out at change HSRG and decide that, well, we're going to settle for a new lower number. I'd be really disappointed if something like that happened.
So we have not looked at bay capacity or anything like that. The exercise that was undertaken was just a hatchery capacity. How much, given our current programs, how much space do we have? We've talked about before, NEMA is maxed out. There's no space in NEMA.
So you're talking about hatchery release capacity.
Hatchery release capacity. It hasn't been elevated to that step that you're talking about. For Forks Creek, we have capacity there. I believe the number I saw was 3.9 million Chinook is what we could currently produce.
In Nacelle or at Forks Creek?
Forks Creek.
So I understand.
We release at 3.2. I believe stretching it like to the maximum capacity, it's somewhere around 3.9. But keep in mind that we've got a million spring Chinook set aside, that would take the place. And just to kind of round back and finish out that spring Chinook discussion, we're not talking about collecting brood in Willapa Bay. This will be something that, as eggs are available from Kalama, once they've taken their egg take, if they can collect more, they will collect more for us. This is not something that we're going to...
I understand that, but my concern is about, and it's a reality, not just the stream-bearing capacities, but the bay-bearing capacity combined with our, you know, let's be honest, seriously warmer waters in our ocean. You know, NOAA scientists, I just had a great conversation with a biologist from Hancock Forest Property Management, somebody who used to work with NOAA. And the reality of how they feel about our, you know, juvenile salmon population and maturing salmon in the ocean and what that means. So as we start to crank out more fish, what are we going to help us or are we going to hurt us? And somebody has to start looking at what the changes have been in Willapa Bay so that we can get that right, so that we're making that habitat as friendly as possible. I mean, who's in charge of doing those kind of habitat review? Habitat is part of your purview, is it not? So when was the last time those kind of reviews were done? And what are we seeing?
In terms of carrying capacity for salmon inside Willapa Bay?
I mean, we
never, as far as I know. Right. I don't know. I won't say that with 100% assurance because I'm not sure. I haven't seen any documents from 50s, 60s, 70s that would say that there was something like that done. I think there is no comprehensive assessment, and quite frankly, that'd be quite costly and take quite a bit of time.
It's almost impossible to actually measure carrying capacity because it's a moving target, right? So yeah. What carrying capacity is one day might change, you know, day by day. So it really depends, as you say, on the habitat. And we need to, I think, we need to do some of that habitat work, though. Mm-hmm.
And you go back to the 60s, you were talking about a carrying capacity that they were gauging that had 100,000 chum spawn in there. They ain't got them anymore.
Yeah.
So you got a changing environment.
Yeah.
All the way along, you know, and you just almost have to do it yearly. To have it at the gauge.
Yeah.
Do they do that kind of assessment like Columbia River or Great Harbor? Mm-hmm. I don't think they exist.
I've seen some of that stuff. An overarching habitat assessment. They did one in the Chehalis for the Chehalis Basin Task Force. They did a comprehensive
within
habitat
the Chehalis,
assessment
so not,
within the Chehalis.
Not yet.
This was just as part of the funds that came out of that. This dam project.
What's a salmonoid stay there?
What's that?
When a salmonoid's released from the hatchery, how long is it before he hits the ocean?
It depends on species.
Fall salmon.
Oh, Chinook?
Yeah.
Yeah, not long. They're not. You know, we have ocean-type Chinook.
Yep.
They hang out for just a small amount of time, and then they head to the ocean.
So how long is a bay, then, once they hit the river and get to the bay? I mean, what's your estimate time out there?
Because
this is more of
a... Monstimate? No.
That bay flushes
days.
No. Every 6 hours.
Days.
Yeah. I can tell you, because I get to watch them in the name of flats.
Okay.
You know, I know when you're releasing Chinook.
Yeah. And they hit right out. They're salted up.
Alfred Hitchcock presents, you know, and here come the birds. And,
yeah.
And it's several weeks, okay? It's a good 3 weeks. They're sifting back and forth, in and out of the name of channels, getting used to the salt, and then they leave. In other words, it's more than 2 or 3 meals they have to eat. It's a few weeks, and you know I just and this is not you, but when we say we're going to release X million more salmon, and it costs too much to find out if the habitat can handle them or not, that's a problem. I mean, two possible problems. One, you hit a wall with a hatchery once and lose more than you added. The other thing is, what about the poor wild ones that are out there when they run out of food? Because they're bigger, fatter, stronger brothers from the hatchery take over.
Well, let's,
so I just
let's keep
don't know
in
how
mind
it costs too much to figure that out.
Let's
you know,
keep in mind that here that it, if we look back in history, we've had a lot more fish than we have right now.
I know.
And the numbers that we're talking about still are smaller than past.
But when I look back in history at the eelgrass maps, and I look back at the history at the herring spawning mass, which ran at 400 tons, okay? And now it's 37 tons, and I had to find it for them. And so I know, and their habitat is eelgrass. And so I know the habitat is less. Can't tell you how much, but I'll guarantee you it's less than it was. You know, not too many, 15 years ago, whatever, we had so many Chinook coming out of the Nazel. Hell, there was a tidewater sport fishing. You could go troll with a boat and catch Chinook. So it certainly used to handle a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not in that shape now, I can tell you.
opinion. Yeah, you may be absolutely.
I got a question.
Right.
Can I ask him a question?
Yeah,
do you have scientific proof of that? That there's no eelgrass, that the eelgrass is down? Because
well,
I've been listening to this from these meetings time and time and time and time again.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been on those oyster dredges a long time, and I see the eelgrass out there. And I just want to know if you've got scientific proof of that, because you keep telling these people that you like you do, because I strongly disagree with you on that.
I'll tell you what I have, okay? I have...
I don't mind hate, folks.
I'm just, because I've listened to this.
I'll answer this question if you want me to. Otherwise, I won't.
No,
go, no difference
go ahead. I'm just cautioning folks that we will treat each other respectfully, or we will end this meeting and walk out. That's all.
How is that disrespectful?
No, I'm not saying
I asked you if I could ask him
Greg,
a question.
And I said yes, and I wasn't saying you were
and I just want
disrespectful.
To know.
I was just cautioning folks before we get there. So let's just be respectful. Don't mind the banner. No, I don't at all.
Here's what we have. We have the last good eelgrass map of the bay that I could find, and I've looked for them for 6-8 years. Okay? It was 2006-2007 by Dumbal and Echeverria. And it shows eelgrass beds, two maps, one for Japanese eelgrass, one for Zastera marina. And I can show you big patches that show on the map. I can show you patches. I haven't surveyed the whole thing. I can show you patches that are not there, and they are on the map. Okay. The two biggest patches of marina in the bay are on the maps are west of Long Island and some sticking out north of Long Island. And then there's an even more monster patch off between Nakata and Oysterville. Go to a herring spawning map, which we have, and that's the two monster herring spawning beds we have. And their herring are telling us we don't have a place to find layer eggs anymore. That's what I can tell you.
So you're saying you haven't been out there? You've seen it
what
on a map?
What I'm saying is we need another survey
probably
to match up with that one before we stick our neck out too far.
That's there you go. Then that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm asking. So you haven't been there, and that's... Fine, do a survey.
I have 100 grand on those beds, so I have been there.
I've spent 300 days on that bay.
Well, good for you.
You know, a year. And I'm just saying that I just disagree with what you're saying on that. You know, for somebody that's just looking at a map versus somebody that's being out on the water every day. You know, high tide and low tide.
I don't know if eelgrass is the amount of available eelgrass is shrinking or not. I don't know the answer. I don't know.
Is that your question?
No,
I'm not. I'm not sure that. I'm not sure. I don't know. I would have to check with. I know wildlife does some work around eelgrass as part of the bird stuff. But I don't know if they've done any sort of comprehensive assessment. I can double check with them and see if I can find some information. I doubt it. I would doubt it.
I'm just saying it would be prudent to find out.
No, we get the point.
Ten-year-old maps scare me.
Let's go back to the list.
Here. Yeah, Greg actually has a question. I got Greg, Tim, Norm, and then Ross. Was that your question, or do you have another question?
That's fine.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm a fisherman in 2019 now, and I think, and I try to look at things realistically as well. And what I see with this is, you know, until you eliminate 80% of the population, we're going to have a hard time meeting these wild fish goals. Let's be honest. You know, we have a forestry industry here. We have an oyster industry. We have a lot of industries that we're just not going to destroy over a hatchery stray wild fish that we're trying to create. So when you're talking 14 and 20%, that's an elimination of the commercial fishery. We've seen that over the last, since this policy was developed. So I just want to know if there's any, and now this policy is going to come back and get the recreational fishery. It's coming. Just like we said when it was created, the bat swing, and it, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's the decreased production in Forks Creek. There's not going to be any fish there to harvest the 14 or 20. There's no fish left. Okay, I want to know if there's any appetite from this, from the department, to treat this fishery as what it is. Let's just make, why can't we just make it a terminal fishery and maximize the production out of all three of the hatcheries for everybody? That's what I don't understand, because we're fighting over 14 and 20% and this and that harvest rates. That's going to eliminate all the fisheries. I mean, it's obvious. It's coming. We're not going to be, we're going to come here and there's not going to be a fishery for anybody.
In a month,
it's gone.
In a month.
And
come back next month.
You know, so, you know, we just keep constantly fighting over this, you know, let's treat it at what it is. You know, we created, this policy was created on data, or non-data, you know, this scientific data that we've learned throughout this policy. And nobody can argue that, because we've seen it. We've seen genetics, we've seen everything, and there was not a problem. I mean, I just want to know if the state has any appetite of just throwing the whole thing out, raise some fish, and let everybody fish. Because you're not going to change the habitat as much as we all want to, because you're putting people out of work when you do it. And I'm not comfortable with that. I don't want to sacrifice 10,000 jobs for my job. That's not right. You know, let's just treat it at what it is. The recreational fishery gets a fishery. I mean, I always look at the year prior to this policy when everybody had a good season. And there is not one person in this room that would not say that. The recreational had a heck of a fishery. The commercial had we were all happy. It was either 2014, I think is what it was. It was the year before the policy.
Yeah.
We had everything. And I just don't understand, because that sledgehammer is coming to hit them, and it's coming. And I think the state needs to put it out on the screen on what your bag limits are going to be and everything to meet all this 14 and 20% or whatever it is. Because,
okay.
You know, so, and let's show a fishery out there. And I just find this absolutely ludicrous that we're fighting over the last fish in here, and that's what we're doing. You're fighting over the last fish. I mean, that's what I want to know, because I'm going to tell you right now, conversations that we've had with the commission, there's appetite for that.
For what?
For throwing the whole thing out and raising fish to benefit everybody in this room.
So, I mean, not aware of those conversations. Mm-hmm. If they have taken place, I haven't been a part of them.
You weren't.
Thanks for that, Lance. I would think I would remember. The mandate of the department is to protect, preserve, and perpetuate. There's other cases where salmon stocks have been completely wiped out in areas, and we have put policies and actions in place to repatriate, to try and get those fish back, and to try and manage them sustainably, providing some level of harvest. I've said here before that there is not a salmon stock anywhere on the West Coast that is so precious that it doesn't have an impact somewhere.
But my other part of that question too, though, is, through this whole policy, this last 4 years, through this policy, you have always said, and the department has always said, this is the law. This is what we go by. We do not, this is it right here, this policy. And if that policy says, raise fish wide open, but no, that's what it's always fallen back on. Every time we've tried to work, you know, on different things.
It isn't necessarily.
Well, what about
the
strong
law
guidance that they say throw it out the window and raise fish?
Laws are handed down in whack, right? And RCW, this is strong guidance. Right now, this is the guidance that we're given by the commission. The commission are our bosses, and they weigh in on what those management and conservation objectives will be.
What is the easiest way for conservation? We've talked about it forever. What's the best situation for conservation in this bay? In your mind.
What's the best?
What would be the best way for us to look forward to conservation in this bay for Chinook salmon? I'm not going into dog. Or
Northern Interception.
Thank you, Norm.
Huh?
Eliminate Northern Interception in ocean fisheries.
Is that going to happen?
No.
So what's the next best way?
It's not going to happen, but it's going to get shaved off a little
it
bit.
It is going to get cut back some, but until things probably start to go the other way, then you'll see them show up more.
Another thing to consider there, folks, is we've negotiated some stuff in PST that would be reductions from previous years.
Right, I understand. I'm waiting for the answer that what's the best way for conservation to get less hatchery fish on the spawning ground? Is it by us fishing? Is it by the wrecks fishing?
It's both.
Really?
Given the infrastructure that I have, given the infrastructure I have, in my mind, and this is just me talking, not an agency decision, but you all heard Andy Appleby's talk as much as I did.
Yeah.
I know Mr. Appleby very well. He's been a mentor of mine for a long period of time. It's hard to have a good recreational fishery without a commercial fishery to back it up, given the infrastructure challenges.
Stop raising hatchery fish?
I said that first, yeah. I said
that's the answer to this whole problem, is to stop raising hatchery fish.
Well, I mean, that provides something, but that's kind of a...
Well, it provides less
nuclear option,
less
right?
budget that you have to spend, less things you have to go monitor. I mean, let's not have a fishery for 25 years and see what happens. But nobody wants to do things.
That's the striped bass example from
Maryland.
From Maryland.
Did it work?
We don't know yet.
Yes.
I was fishing there 2 years ago. I was fishing in Maryland 2 years ago.
Maryland's got some.
And I can tell you that. And I was raised in Maryland, and I know it, and I commercially fished in Maryland with my dad and my uncle.
Son of a bitch,
yeah. And I can tell you that it didn't approach the fisheries of the mid-60s, but I had an excellent fishery 2 years ago where I couldn't keep a striper off my line. There was a moratorium for 10 years.
And that was all fishing,
that was
right?
Everybody.
And those are all wild fish the way they have.
Yeah, I mean it's not an apples to apples comparison, but it's just a, you know.
But I haven't heard that presented yet that we eliminate the fishery for 16 or to 20 years or 20 whatever our amount of years. We always want to have a fishery, so we want to have enough fish for a fishery when it probably in the end doesn't benefit
the end goal
of conservation.
Yeah, let me just get back to the second part of Greg's comment. Next year is going to be a tough year for everyone. It's our gap year. We are dealing with the four-year-olds from Forks Creek Production, so this is the first year that we're going to get 350K. Keep in mind, folks, since Forks Creek came online, we have never produced so little fish. What I do know now, from some, albeit incomplete, coated wire tag data, and I'll get into that in just a second, why I say incomplete, is that of the Willapa fish that are encountered in that marine recreational fishery,
In 2T,
75%, around 75% of those are from Forks Creek. NEMA makes up a much smaller proportion of that catch, and Nacelle does, for whatever reason. Partly, I think, the issue with NEMA is we haven't had tags in NEMA. We tagged NEMA since 2000, we've only tagged NEMA fish brood in 2005 and 2006. So I had a couple years of tag data to go off of to look at NEMA. Now, that has changed. In 2015, we put a tag group in NEMA, but it was at the expense of the tag group that was in Forks Creek. So Forks Creek fish that went out in 2015 had no coated wire tags in them. Only NEMA and Nacelle went out with tags. In 2016,
I was able to shift things around and acquire enough funding so that we have tag groups coming out of each facility proportional to their release. So beginning in 2020, we will start to get the recoveries for that and be able to look at the contribution rates of those specific hatcheries to both the commercial and recreational fishery. So, you know, we've got some tag data right now, but it wasn't those tags weren't put in to answer the question we're wanting it to answer. So we'll caveat that data that way. So hold on, Greg. Hold on. Just
a point of order, real quickly. We've all been tagging around here, but we said we were going to go back to the list. Tim has been waiting patiently.
Yeah.
Yes, he's next on the list. Yeah. You two are next.
I'm just trying to answer the rest of Greg's question.
Thank you. I don't talk much.
Is that so? Next year is going to be a substantially less return. We got 40% less hatchery production than we've had. So just overall, there's not going to be as many hatchery fish as there have been. Second to that is while there that proportion of hatchery fish comes down, the number of natural origin fish, and we've shown in your run sizes, pretty much hovers around 3,000 to 4,000 run size every year. A few years below that, a few years above that, but on average, it's right in that level. So the mark rate, what has been basically 8 or 10 hatchery fish to every one wild fish is now going to shrink down to 4 or 5 hatchery fish for every one fish. So, for instance, the harvest rate in Willapa has gone from as high as 15%, just recreational sector, down to 8%. Given that same bag limit and with the reduction like that, the change in mark ratio, that fishery, the harvest rate, the impact rate's going to go up. It's going to be harder. So we're going to have to look at, we're going to, in order, we could possibly craft a commercial and a recreational fishery to meet the 14%. We can absolutely do that. We can absolutely do that. What that will require will be significant reductions in bag limit, some truncating of seasons, shorten the amount of time in order to make sure that there's enough impacts for both fisheries. Keep in mind, the commercials need some Chinook impacts to go after coho. So there's going to be plenty of pain to go around as we go into 2019. So that's my spiel. Next was Tim. Sorry, Tim.
And then Norm.
Okay, I'll run through a list. The commission can manage fisheries within the confines of state and federal law. Willapa is in the state of Washington. Willapa is in the United States. And no deal by a commission to turn it back into a hatchery pool is legal, in my opinion, and can't be done. It also puts stress on the other coastal salmon stocks. You take 14 to 4,000 Chinook natural spawners out of that Chinook natural stock, it increases the pressure through the modeling on Grace Harbor and elsewhere. Okay, so this is a joint project. Okay, the other thing is that 14% or 20%, 14% of zero is zero, 20% of zero is zero. We're in the toilet. We're in, you know, deep shoe-dah. It's not the 14%. It's not an allocation between recreational and commercial. You could give all recreational fish last year to the commercial fleet and not made it home. There was no fish in the water. And the department cannot provide fish it doesn't have. Okay? And then finally, when we look to this orca as the golden parachute, I think you got to understand that the area of the legislature is a phenomenal competitive source for general revenue. There are people out there who are going, oh, get in on the orcas. Maybe it's the libraries that need to have stories or pictures or statutes about the orcas to make people feel better. I can tell you the Department of Natural Resources, if memory serves me right, made a request for $80 million. $80 million to save the orca for habitat. habitat restoration, including restoration of eelgrass beds. Okay? So if anybody thinks that anybody's getting out of the legislature with this kind of money, I just don't know what to tell you. It's all a joke, okay? Everybody's pigpiling on, give me some money because I can save the orcas. And there's only one thing that'll save the orcas. On the ocean, and they've already admitted it, task force is there, move the, this is the benefit we could have, move the harvest inside the terminal. That's the only thing you can do over the next 5 years, because you can't get fish back in 5 years anyway. Any more fish back. What we got is what we got. And the only way you could do that is curtail harvest from Alaska south to Westport, knock those people off the water that are catching the fish prior to or in the orca feeding zone.
And they're catching wild Chinook.
And they're catching wild Chinook right along with it. We've always had enough wild Chinook for Willapa Bay. We've always had nearly twice as much fish, wild fish, Chinook for Willapa Bay. It's what we can't do is get them back across the bar. And so, you know, this is going to be an ongoing changing thing. But one of the things that Ross, or that you missed mentioning was, and I'll mention it now, is the vice chairman set up. Look you right in the eye and look back at your boss and says, how come we keep passing these policies and you guys go out there and they all come back and the public says it's not worth the paper it's written on. Okay? Not worth the paper it's written on. There are people on that board who are getting tired of it not being worth the paper it's written on.
That's what happens when you fall out of an attic and drink it. You know, duly noted.
It could be worse than poking the eye.
Hey, better this than never walking again. So, you know, I want to go back to what Greg and him were saying and glance a little bit. Relationship to, as I think about it, yes, the enhanced package with the enhanced WDFW wish list.
Yeah.
And then the ORCA package is something entirely different. Both packages talk about increasing Chinook salmon production. Not one of the packages, I believe, addresses increasing natural origin Chinook production. They're all about hatchery Chinook production. So here we are down in Willapa Bay with the Willapa system. Since I've been on this committee, it has been a food fight, basically, or actually an allocation fight, and a time and area fight since I've been down. I think Barb told me I got in here at 06.
Sorry.
What?
Sorry.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't seem that long until I think about it.
Yeah.
But, and now we're talking about raising significantly more, not nearly what we used to have, but for today's, the last 10 or 20 years strata of time, significantly more Chinook than we have. And when I look at that in terms of just this system, and I'm not thinking about those other committees I'm on, I'm thinking about this one and this policy and what it was, I thought, was trying to be accomplished. And that was trying to bring back a natural origin stock in 16 to 21 years. Spent time and money bringing in the hatchery reform folks, the 4-H folks, the AHA folks, six times now. If you want to produce more hatchery fish, you got to have a way. If you're going to manage that according to hatchery reform policies for natural origin fish, if you're going to produce hatchery fish, you got to have a way to get the hatchery fish off the spawning beds. And in this system, we have a problem with getting hatchery fish off the spawning beds. Whether it's Nacelle, or whether it's Willapa, Horse Creek, we have a huge problem because we do not have either the fishing techniques or the infrastructure that, in my reading, would be needed to segregate those fish before they ever get to the spawning beds. And it makes no difference how much spawning bed we have there. It doesn't. What makes a difference is how many of those happy fish are we going to get off, and now we're going to potentially increase the number of Chinook produced in Willapa Bay by 60%. If we go to 3.9 million at Forks Creek, and if there's excess capacity at Nacelle.
There is, yeah.
And there is,
an additional, I believe the capacity exercise said we could go to 5 million.
Yeah, so
Chinook at Nacelle.
If we max all that out, we're going to make a significant increase in hatchery fish.
If they survive.
What we're going to end up is we're going to have just that many more hatchery fish on the spawning beds. Unless something changes.
Let me finish. There's a fix in Nacelle. You should be aware of that.
My efforts at the Fish Commission and at the Fish and Wildlife Commission is going to be fine. You want to do that. You want to do that because you want to maximize the MSY thing for both, either whether it's commercial and recreational, either or. Are you going to put the bucks out to put the systems in place to support hatchery reform? Or, as Greg said, hang the damn policy in the bathroom and make good use of it. Okay? Because all of us pushing on either making more fish or not making more fish and whatnot, we have been in gridlock here for as long as I've been here. And we still have hatchery fish on the spawning beds, and we're still having poor returns, and we're still having this fight. So I don't know about you folks. I'm tired of fighting. You know? I'm taking my voice to the commission, the legislature if I have to. These guys already do. I'm going to go down there with my hand in my pocket that's empty, knock on their doors, and say, look, you want to solve the problem? We need some adult supervision here in terms of giving us the tools to play ball. Or don't worry about the fish and just let people go fishing. Because what we're trying to do now, like you said, in Puget Sound, if you take a look at the trend analysis on wild stock, ESA-listed Chinook, and I'm only talking about three stocks, not four. I'm throwing out the Mid-Hood Canal stock because the evidence shows there's Skokomish River fish. But the other three systems, since ESA and after reform have been enacted, the food fight up there has resulted and a continuing downward trend line of wild fish surviving. So we're going to have to make a decision. And we don't have the power to do that. Only the legislature does. And I think that's where I'm going to start working at. As the young lady that's not here said the last meeting I was here, she said we either have to shit or get off the pot. And she was right.
You know, hey, Lance, can I just say one little thing?
We'll definitely provide just like we always do. We'll definitely provide time for the public to come up and talk. Don't you worry. That'll definitely happen. Who's next?
Lance. I'm gonna give you my spiel.
I'm a captive audience, so.
I think it's sad that you, when you stand there and tell all of us that this is going to be a hard year next year, because we're looking at not next year. You weren't going to see any returns come back. You don't have any fish in Forks Creek now. You got 4 years of nothingness coming back. It's not next year.
Yeah,
it's the next 4 years.
Absolutely.
I think, honestly.
We don't know how nacelle fish recruit to that fishery. Our tag data right now suggests that they don't recruit.
That's in the best world. If you do raise. So that's my first problem. The second problem is, and I listen to, we want the conservation area back. We want to be able to fish in that area. And I don't fish in that area. I don't fish in that fishery, but I'm going to be completely honest with you, and that I don't believe it's going to happen. I don't think you're going to see it back. We want to push the line back out. This policy pushed that line out there when we made it. I don't think, as Norm said at one of our meetings, we had, whether it's the legal ability or whatever we're going to talk about, we didn't know what we were doing when it happened. We've since learned that. Absolutely. And that's the way I look at many of these things in this policy that we've done. It's just like us sitting here talking about raising more fish. This policy never once said we should raise more fish. No. This policy said we should raise less fish. That was what we were going to do. Less fish in Forks Creek. Less fish. I mean, everywhere we were going to do was less fish. And the three main things we started with were conservation, which meant, we all know, raise less fish. That's what the conservation goal was when we started this thing. We're going to ramp up a sport fishery, and we're going to keep a viable commercial fishery. Now, I would love to see him pull that out of his behind where he can raise less fish, get a better sport fishery, and maintain a commercial fishery.
Yeah.
Because he would be a magic man if he could do it. This policy is so set up to fail beyond what we've learned within this policy in the last 4 years. We can come to these meetings and tell you guys that our fishery is dead, and I wish he could put on a board where we really are. Because we've gone in the 4 years from 60 boats fishing on Chinooks to 8, 10, 12 boats. That's it. And those guys aren't making any money at it. So we are done. And our silver fishery looks like a heartbeat. It goes up 1 year, then it tanks for a couple years. We can't make a living or any money on it. We've said this over and over. And I sit here and I feel like, and I'm going to point to you, Tim, when we talk about this policy going in front of the Fish Commission and them looking to make changes, and I know you don't want them to make changes to it, but I'm, from my perspective of sitting here, this thing is a piece of crap. And that's how I feel, because it absolutely, it's gutted our fishery and it's gone, and it's going to gut the sport fishery. How in God's name is he going to get 3.9 million eggs, and where's he going to get it from? We can't get egg take in Chinooks in the nacelle. Yeah. We can't get it in the Nema. We're getting it from Forks Creek. So you have to stop fishing in all those areas where those fish are laying. Now you're going to lose all those upper reaches to your sport fishery. You're going to lose the marine area to your sport fishery. I mean, if you're honest about this thing, he needs 5 million eggs in a nacelle. When was the last time you got 5 million eggs in a nacelle? It hasn't happened in years. He needs 3.9 million. How is he going to magically get that off of a 350,000 out plant? There's no possible way, if we have a fishery, for them to do the ramp up of fish.
I see you, Ross.
That they're talking about doing. Even if we don't fish, if none of us fish, no in river, no marine, I don't think he's going to get those fish to raise what would be, I guess, now about 10 million fish.
Yeah. So,
or 11 million fish. There's no way if we fish one day, any of us, they won't get it. So we're worried about them. I don't know where he's going to pull these fish out of. But that's the problem I see with this policy now that none of us are looking at. And that's not this year. That's the next 4 years. We can't have a fishery.
That's what this policy has taken us to.
It's going to be, I won't disagree with really anything you said, Lance. It's going to be very difficult.
That's the road that's taken us down.
When we went
that's
into
a good
this,
road.
And I won't sit here and sugarcoat it. We had little to no data. Good data. To go into a lot of policy development. We did the best we could with what we had. And that's where it pointed.
But
I think we know some things. Let me finish. We know some things differently now. For us to provide a full and enhanced recreational fishery and gut Forks Creek like it was, those two things don't match up based on the data that I'm looking at so far. Maybe in a few years from now, that'll look different if nacelle fish end up recruiting. But quite frankly, I don't think they will.
I don't either.
Ross and I have talked about this. I think it's about where those fish stage in the marine area.
I think
Forks Creek fish sit between 2T and 2U and wash back and forth until they get their cues. So the rec fleet gets multiple chances at those. I think the Nema and nacelle fish move down, and I'll use his term, conjunction-junction, and that's where they sit. And I know that because I've been on your boat, and that's where we find them. So some of that stuff is competing. I think those are questions that we have for the commission, and that's why we're doing this comprehensive review. Hey, look, we're finding out some things now that don't match up with what we thought before. I mean, here's the big one, 30% increase in recreational harvest, right, in the marine area.
Increase of fish.
Now, one of those years that we're looking at is 2015, which happens to be the year where all the stars aligned perfectly and fishing was absolutely off the charts.
And
I think that a lot of those fish we know now didn't belong here. Mm-hmm. And that we moved that line out and we took a big chunk, much bigger chunk than we had been taking, out of some of those stocks. And now we got smacked. You will not do that again.
Well, how can you? We all sit here and argue, just like we say, no northern fisheries, and then we go do it. I mean, that's how I look at that. We went and took fish from somebody else,
yeah.
And then we sit at this table and say, we don't want Canada to take our fish. We don't want Alaska to take our fish.
I think.
But we'll take them from somebody else.
Go ahead, Tim.
I'm sorry. I'm finishing up mine. This is what I want from you. When you talk to the Fish Commission, I think maybe you don't see that, but that's how I honestly feel about this policy. Is if you look at the things within it, like egg take, you're going to fail. I mean, if I said your job is going to depend on whether you get those eggs for this ramped up fish deal, which this policy didn't call for, but we're going to do it anyway, so it's totally changing. Everything
well,
in Willapa
there's,
Bay,
there's
but yet
stuff.
We think this policy is something we ought to hold on to. And I just can't.
And there's lots of stuff that are out there that have effects to this policy that are still up in the air. The enhanced fishery package, the southern resident killer whales, the outcome of hatchery reform. All those things, in my mind, need to almost come to fruition before we can figure out where we need to go.
But you're still 4 years out on any of that. I mean, you've got 4 years
for
all of us right now. You might as well forget about it. You can fish all you want, but there won't be
fish.
Even
if we increase fish in 2019, we won't see them till 2023. So we've got a substantial gap here in marine recreational fisheries based on what we've got so far, the data that I'm looking at right now. Now, I will caveat that and say that data was never intended to be used the way I'm using it. But it is all I've got.
It's just simple math.
No, I get it. We've also
you might
been
have
challenged
a great ocean year, but it's
we've
not.
Also been challenged in the Nema and the Nacelle collecting broodstock.
Yeah.
We're trying to produce 2.5 million off 800K. We've had to utilize every female we can get our hands on in order to do that in the Nacelle. We had a significant die-off event in 2015 in the Nacelle that hit Nema as well, although not as as bad, and then we had what happened this year. As I've said before, the frequency of those events, I think, is going to increase. I see the rains coming later and later, leading to lower flows and warmer temperatures in August. I don't see, I think it's going to be real difficult for us just to be able to produce NEMA fish at 3.3 million this year. I don't know how we're going to get brood to satisfy what we're trying to do at this point in time. It's going to be very difficult, and if nature decides to sucker punch us again, which is absolutely quite possible, given what's setting up off the coast, I don't know how we're gonna get the brood we need.
But it seems like hasn't Forks Creek actually done pretty good at not getting in that?
Forks Creek, and I've got a few ideas on why Forks Willapa does that. I think it's about the quantity and quality of staging habitat in the Willapa. The Willapa is cooler than NEMA nacelle. The Willapa has much more pool riffle habitat over a longer area for fish to stage, so they don't get so dense, right? Come into NEMA, there's only, you know, 4 or 5 holes that they can stack up in, and all those fish have to stack up. You couple that with high stream temps and low flows and those densities, you're asking for it. You're asking for it.
Yeah.
So all that stuff is going to be a challenge. I think that we need to, you know, we need to take a real hard look at this stuff and start thinking about some common sense solutions that we can all agree to save what we want. And I started this with the very first meeting we had of this advisory group. I said we all have one common goal, regardless of where you sit.
Survive.
Whether it's Ross, Lance, Tim, Marlisa, whoever, sustainable fisheries. That's what we all want, isn't it? We all want sustainable fisheries, right? So that's what we have in common. So I think, personally, and I agree with what Norm said, ever since I've got here in 2012, all I've seen is this allocation fight.
Yep.
I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. And we wrongly point at each other and say, you're the reason I'm not getting it. Now, there's a term for that. It's called scapegoating, right? We point at the other guy and say, it's his fault. I'm not getting what I want. If he just stopped, it'll be better for me. That is not the case, and that won't work. It won't. Not with what we have. I see you, Ross. So, anyways.
Ross is next.
Ross.
I take a different look at this, and present company excluded now. Okay. But the problem isn't the policy. The problem is the department. Okay. To make this policy work, you need better performing hatcheries, you need some equipment at the hatcheries, you need some things. Okay. And we put out a policy that was based on our interpretation of the law, and we said we're going to wave a magic wand and it's going to work. Okay. It can't work without fish separating weirs. It can't work without hatcheries that are in better shape. We're going to produce more fish. In my opinion, that's a joke. We can't keep the ones alive we have. We lost 1,000 fish at Forks Creek. How did that happen? You know, come on. And so this policy will never work on the budget the department has.
I would agree.
And you can't make it work. But there's nothing wrong with the policy if we got a little more professional, got a budget to handle it, and I would hope that, and like I say, if we had a chance to look at it, that's what I would do. Okay? But I would hope that you all would go before the commission and say, we can't make this policy work with the equipment, with the practices, and with the budget that we have. And in my opinion, we're worried about which maybe we can't make it work with the bay that we have. And that costs money to go check out the bay too. And if you don't do that, you're just asking for a disaster. The only question is, where does it start first? Now, I haven't heard that much bickering about who gets the fish tonight. What I'm hearing is everybody knows there ain't
no fish. There'll be no fish, so there's nobody to
fish to argue about. But I can show you with the proper budget and the proper equipment and the proper personnel in the right places, you're going to have enough fish. And I see no plans to create enough fish. We're going to do it with the budget we got. You can't do it. And you can't change the policy to make it work, in my opinion, on your current budget.
Just like I said in, I believe it was the forecasting meeting last year, Larry Phillips got up and was talking, and this topic of funding came up. And Larry looked over to me and said, how much have you requested from the legislature? And I remember everybody got a good laugh at this.
Yeah.
$2.5 million is what I requested. So the department doesn't control the purse strings. We can ask for whatever we want. As Tim eloquently pointed out earlier, a lot of folks are going, agencies going hat in hands.
Yeah.
To go after money because they think now is a good time to do it.
And I understand that. But I wasted a lot of time a couple of years ago going to several commission meetings because the agenda said detailed budget. Okay. And I sat there all day and there was no discussion of any detailed budget. And people asked me, well, Ross, why don't you support a fee increase? My answer is always the same. For what? And you don't get an answer. Until you fix that process, none of this is going to work. The new policy is not going to work. I don't care if it's 14% or 17.5%.
Okay.
That's over without a little silver and gold to back it up and make it work. And I don't think it would take that much. But anytime I ask you about what about this, what about that, what about that, there's not enough for any of it. Enough money for any of it.
I got enough money.
So we're spending every dime he's got.
I've got enough money to do what we're currently doing.
Right, that's all you got.
That has to be my.
But I think the nacelle's getting rebuilt. That's a big chunk of money.
Nacelle.
I mean, you're getting something done.
It's slow, but also you have to weigh that. You know, as I've said before, and you'll hear me say again, I got good news and I got bad news for you. The good news is we don't have any ESA listed species. The bad news is. We don't have any ESA listed species, right? You guys can almost quote it now. So we don't necessarily climb up some of those prioritized lists when it comes to splitting out the coins.
That's just jumping from the frying pan.
And it's quite possibly. I mean, good luck trying to get that through NOAA now. We've been working on harvest management plants for Puget Sound for 11 years now that have been sitting on NOAA's desk. That's not the department. That's the feds. Right,
and they're on furlough.
And now they're furloughed, so we're not even sure. You know, I mean,
Forks Creek
it's going to be a very challenging north of Falcon. Even you know, I know some folks had to do their first PSC meeting last week in Vancouver. Some of them are paying for their own travel and don't know how that's gonna shape out.
Nacelle is a good thing, I hope.
So I hope so as well.
Nobody's discussed with us what it's going to look like or do.
It's not.
It's pretty nice.
The plans aren't completely finalized. I think they're rounding out into shape. It's I haven't seen a current schematic and once I learned that the initial monies for phase one came through, to tell you the truth, I quit checking.
But the thing
it's
is,
like, okay, well, it looks like shovels are going to hit the ground this year.
The thing is
what
it's
I've
capital
talking.
Budget, and I think we're really hurting with O&M. I really do.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Who is next?
We've got Tim, Marlisa, then Norm.
Okay, and then I'm gonna cut it off there, and then we'll let the public speak. Go ahead, Tim.
Back when I went to the Raymond meeting that you talked about, I became very upset. Spent a lot of money, a lot of time going through litigation to open this whole process up. And what I got out of it was a department staff standing in front of the room and saying, what is your aspirations of profit? What is your aspirations of pleasure? As if somehow you guys were entitled to 60 boats, X number of dollars. Not entitled to darn. Neither are the guy with a pole. They're not entitled to a bag limit. We're entitled to allocate the fish available for harvest. But we're paying $14 to grow a salmon, and you guys are selling them for less than what it costs us to grow them and not making a living. It's a massive, huge, unbelievable public subsidy that has been going in to sports and commercial fisheries in this state. And it won't stand long-term anymore. And when you get to to look at these things through, I think we have to look through the big picture. I mentioned this to you guys. If I was a small business advocate in the fishing industry, I would have told you, you got to figure out how to get down to 10 boats, and you can't economically rely on this and this alone. Okay, I had to go through those closing gas stations all over the country. Okay, we were forced into it. The other part is the big picture. You could go to a hatchery, you could put in $12 million in the nacelle and not grow a stinking fish if the nacelle river dried up. So your production facility is only as good as your ability to grow the fish in the water all the way out into the bay, into the ocean, and bring them back as adults so you can get them. Okay? Why would you go out and buy 500 heifers if you were a dairy farmer with 1 acre? They're starved. Okay? You can't do it. So what is it that we're capable of doing? Not what our aspirations are. When do we decide or figure out what it is we can grow and how we can grow? And we had the biggest thing I ever figured out was when I went back and listened to the commercial guild letters in conversations in an advisory committee that everybody was blocked out of in those days about the draft policy and the move to grow Chinook in that bag. And I remember them being told, if you grow these Chinook, we won't be able to catch them. We'll wipe out what few natural spawners we have, and then you're going to take us off the water. You guys said it clear back in 2010. And this department knew it, willingly, knowingly lied to you. Okay? The purpose of those salmon and those Chinook in there that you became reliant on was to pay Canada back. It was in a trade that Anderson made. Okay? You got to get to the facts. We can grow these fish, but you can build a plant somewhere, but it hasn't got any raw materials. We're all going down. That's $12 million in the cell. Do you think a person would grow, plant 500 acres of corn in Euphrata without knowledge that he's got the irrigation so he can harvest? This is pathetic. And the only encouraging thing I can tell you is that lately we're getting closer and closer and closer. But we haven't even fished on the policy, guys. We are fishing today on what we did in 2010. They took us down this yellow brick road. The policy hasn't even come into effect, except for a few days that you can't go into the north and a recreational priority. Okay, as soon as we got through a little bit of water fish, give all the fish to six guys and they go broke. I couldn't encourage, and it's got to come out. This economic reality has got to come out of you guys, just like it came out of my guys. Do not turn to this government to provide you with $10 million worth of subsidy to grow fish so you can make $100,000. It's over, okay? It has to end. Commercial fishing does not have to end. I've never advocated it. But it's got to adapt and evolve. Thank you.
Who's next?
Marlisa.
Talk a little bit about water quality and about focusing on things that we can fix. And I think that everybody has complaints. You know, this is wrong, that's wrong, we can't do this, we're not going to succeed there. I think that many times with the problems we've had in the nacelle, in 2015, if I remember right, the reason we had such a nick problem there is because the fish became sick and we didn't have any medication to treat them with because somebody, a staff member, forgot to order it. And so by the time it got here from Canada, by the time it got diagnosed, you know, it was too long to get the medication here and fish were already dying. If I remember correctly, that was the scenario in nacelle. Mm-hmm. So the scenario in nacelle, our sorry, NEMA this year was a little bit different. Early in the spring, I asked you to dredge it out. Said we don't have enough water in there because of silting. The silting problem is largely due to 50 years of silt filtration behind the diversion dam, which is completely full now. There's like no ground behind it. It's practically to the top, so you might as well every time you get a little bit of water, you know, in the wintertime, it just scoops all that sand out. It's got nowhere to go but downstream and fill into whatever convenient hole you've got. So looking at this river alone, looking at things that we can fix to help save the fish that we've already paid to raise is like, you know, the wall's falling down for want of a hammer, a nail, you know. Can't put the nail in to hold the board there, and so the whole wall falls down. So let's work together as a team this year, right now, because water quality is a problem, and let's talk about small things that don't cost much money that might save the entire salmon run when it comes in. Let's get that river dredged out. Let's talk about aerators. I've been looking into it on my own. You know, I'm not going to buy the department's philosophy that, well, we've never used them, so we shouldn't, or we've never used them, so we can't. Every trout, commercial trout, private raiser uses them very successfully. They cool the water, they clean the water, you know, they aerate the water. We have to be able to recycle water. We can't rely on, you know, a constant flow to come in and save us anymore. We're going to have to make some changes within every facility that's having water flow problems. And I think that you should place some type of department team on just that. You know, whether it's a maintenance team that's going to go in and look and see what we've got that we can use, that's in place, that maybe can be fixed, or what small things can we try to see if we can avoid that happening. Because you can't tell me that we didn't lose the NEMA fish because we have a water problem that possibly could have been avoided. That's all.
Okay. Anybody from the public like to get up? And
you got no
more? Oh, did I have one more? I'm sorry.
And Lance
Lance
has asked to talk as well if you allow.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, just very quickly, understand that the fee structure increase includes a biannual cost of living adjustment. Doesn't have to go through process. In other words, it's automatic.
That's my understanding, but I'm pretty hazy on it.
I'm not. That's why.
Okay.
I'm not asking you. I'm making that station.
I'm telling you.
All right.
I am making that station. If the fee increase gets approved the way it's written, it includes an automatic cost of living increase. A fee increase based on the cost of living every biennium. So every 2 years, our license fees will go up, and that's all of our license fees, not just recreational. I believe the commercial fleet, they're included in it. Okay? So that's one thing. The other thing I just want to close with is that we're sitting here demanding. Recently, the state, it took about 10 years, there was a lawsuit called, and it was called the McClary lawsuit, McClary versus the state of Washington, and it went to the state Supreme Court, and it was based on a constitutional issue, okay? The results were the state of Washington had to cough up $2 billion to improve the school system. It happened. They found $2 billion. Lance, I'm looking at you, and I'm hoping that you can tell me that the commercial fishermen of Washington State are looking at the state of Washington Constitution and trying to find something in there that guarantees a fishery so that we all can unite and do the same damn thing. Because otherwise, the legislators, I'm convinced, are not going to listen to us. And nothing's going to fix this. All this rhetoric isn't going to fix a damn thing. Until we have what we've all said, everyone, every sector here has said it. Until we have the tools to manage it, physical tools to manage it, it's only going to get worse. Lance's right, it's going to get worse.
It's over. It's not, Timmy's exactly right. It's over.
Go ahead, Lance.
It's over for all of us. I mean, I don't think that, I know what you're saying, but I think in that same sentence you have to say, the general public's got to realize they're not going to fishery either. It's not just going to...
Oh, no. No, I totally agree.
It's not going to just be the commercial fisheries gone. It's they're both. Everything's gone. And that's where this policy... And I think that when we got into this discussion at Raymond 4 years ago or 5 years ago, for that was exactly what most of the commercial guys said.
That's what your dad said.
You know, was that this policy will be the ruination of all of us. It's not... And I think it's ludicrous to think that we're going to continue raising these fish. Now maybe you got the trump of the whale to help us through that may trump some of these policy things. But
I'd hate to be a whale waiting for that.
I honestly don't believe this is going to do one thing for the whales. I think you're going to see them decrease and decline and be gone just as they're going now. And I think it's all because of humans. Just like all the rest of this stuff, my belief is. Too much pollution, too much harassment, too much... It's not these fish. This is a hocus-pocus thing that we're doing. And, you know, if it benefits us, I guess in the end it does. But I honestly think 5 years from now, those whales are going to be in worse... I'm not a biologist. I haven't taken marine study, but I...
You and I have talked about this
before. I think it's going to, you know, this
we'll get to you, Ron. Just give us a...
It's going
to
continue to happen.
You'll get your chance.
And nobody wants to deal with my deal of getting rid of humans, so... Yeah. That's my belief with all this.
Marlisa, you got quick.
You know, I think money is. You know, we have to bring money back into our hatcheries and our infrastructure. I drew this little upside down pyramid for everybody to look at here, and somebody commented about, you know, fee increases that we need to do, biennial staff increases, and we have a huge public perception problem. And not that you aren't deserving of every penny that you make, Chad. It's not about you and depriving you of a salary increase that I'm sure you deserve. But we have to be showing the public with a fee increase that it's going towards a successful implementation of growing fish for them to have a chance at.
Okay.
And it is a have a chance at. It's not a guarantee.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, my...
Go ahead. Nope, you got to come up here, John. Okay. You got to come up to the mic, Ron. If you guys need to, I know you need to get to work, so feel free to walk out real quick before we get started. Oh, okay.
You know, I'm sticking up for Lance and all these guys, everybody.
Yeah, go ahead. Have a seat. Hey, folks, Marlisa, please can we, so we can have some clarity on the mic. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, my name's Ron Schweitzer, and I've been listening to this meeting, and everybody's make a lot of sense towards their point of view and allocation. But what I can't understand, why nobody's discussed the fact of all these Chinook can be raised in the hatcheries in Willapaw. Who's going to get them? Phil Anderson of PFMC is going to give every damn one of them to the killer whales and the Canadian and Alaskan fisheries and Lance and his partner ain't going to get shit just like the gravel won't get shit. Excuse me.
Thank you, Ron.
Pissing me off.
I got my 2 bits worth I want to talk about.
Please, Leroy. Enlighten us.
Well, I'm Leroy Weisner. I've been on this committee ever since it was formed. I got off, 3 years ago? I have told you at public meetings the only way that you're going to make this thing fly is to get rid of HSRG and raise all the fish and let it go at that. And if I remember correctly, in the policy here, the department's reason is, you know, to supply a viable fishery for commercial and for recreational. And I'm looking at you guys and I'm saying, hey, you're partly at fault here because you're with everybody that said what they've said, and you can't be standing there with your earplugs in. I think that you people or the department needs to sit down and approach the commission and say, hey, this is what we've got to do. We've tried this for how many years and it doesn't work? There are certain watersheds, and the Willapaw is one, the Cowlitz is probably another one, there is no wild fish anymore. For Christ's sake, let's do something. Instead of, like Tim says, throwing money after money, it doesn't do anything. Let's get rid of HSRG and just raise hatchery fish and let it be done.
Thank you, Leroy. Art, would you like to talk?
Yeah. Art Holman, you know, it's not the policy this year that's done it. We didn't have the fish. They didn't show up. And I've been fishing for 70 years. and this is the worst year I've had. And I know some commercial friends of mine have had, in fact, one of them quit fishing halfway through the season because there's no fish. And you can't blame that on the policy. That's ocean fishery. The ocean has killed fish, and all these fish that they're raising, they're going to lose half of them because there's no feed in the bay and in rivers. I used to walk the rivers, and there'd be carcasses all over. You don't see that anymore. And until they start putting carcasses back in the rivers the way they should, we aren't going to have fish.
Thank you, Art. Hey, Paul? Paul, would you like to say something?
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
So, my name's Paul Qualey. I'm a sports fisherman. I come from Buckley, so drive a little ways to come out to Willapa Bay and fish. I would be in support of moving the hatchery fish back to Forks Creek. It seems the only place that does very well consistently. That is, if you can't have hatchery fish everywhere in the bay. If you look up Chinook and their habitat that they need, from my research, the rivers that it describes don't describe the rivers of Willapa Bay. They describe bigger rivers, you know, such as Queets, things of that nature. So it seems like we're working really hard to try to preserve a fish that's not going to do very well just given its habitat. So I would like to see more fish everywhere, all through the bay, for all user groups. Thank you for the time to comment.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you all for coming. We'll have some notices coming out for North of Falcon here over the next couple of weeks to give everybody that meeting schedule. I will tell you, we're planning on having the forecast meeting at Monty City Hall on February 26th. So I'll give you a little headway on that. Also, wanted folks to know that all our advisory groups and public meetings for Willapa Bay will be held at Raymond Elks this year. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it.
You got all the information.
It's taken a long time to do that.
I believe that's why.